Thank you for joining us, everyone, for another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people believe celestial beings have been influencing the history of this planet since history began. The celestials don't call this place Earth, they call this place Urantia. One gentleman, in my humble opinion, who knows more about this topic than anyone, is our guest of honor every hour. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Steven.
How's life in paradise today?
Today the weather's real nice. And space weather missed us. That's just nice. That big X-flare that erupted from the sun wasn't headed in our direction, but it's supposed to have been a glancing blow, but it looks like it was a complete miss, and that's good.
Because we're all still here.
Yeah. But earlier ones, apparently the Russians are blaming it for knocking down their Mars probe. They had a Mars probe that was supposed headed on that way, but it apparently got hit by an earlier flare, and it's down now. It didn't make it.
This is the one that fell back to Earth a week or so ago?
Yeah, that's right, and they made an official statement today, I guess.
Well, now, wait. Just if we can digress for just one brief moment here. Isn't it odd? I'd like to see the statistics. The number of space probes we've sent to Mars that never got there or got there right to the atmosphere, you know, went like a bajillion miles in the last 1/1000th of 1%, then they crashed. That's a kind of... You know, and you were told we don't go there, yet we had numerous probes we sent there that made it clear to the atmosphere before they failed. Same with the Russians. Here's another one. Is that just all coincidence?
Well, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do, you know, get over there. Maybe some of the technology that we were getting over there later wasn't very good. It's more susceptible to the different kinds of effects that could be troublesome. However, I always remember that a little bit of a concern in the composure of the pilot, that when I asked to go back, make a little diversion and visit Mars on the way back to planet Earth, you know. And when we were there, they didn't want me to... I felt that they didn't want me to ask any more, like, can we go down to the surface or anything like that. It just seemed a bit, is this good enough? Is this good enough?
Well, right. So if they have reservations about that, then certainly they wouldn't allow us to just send whatever up there. Yes, listeners, I know that we have two rovers on the surface of Mars right now. But, you know, if they were monitoring it and let them land in the middle of the Sahara Desert, then why would they care? But anyway, okay, maybe I'm being too conspiratorial here. Well, I'm sorry. I sort of interrupted your monologue with that when you talked about Mars and the Mars rover of the Russians.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that we can be thankful for in this last X blast from the sun, and it really is a blast. It's tremendous in size, and it does let loose of tremendous energy. So We are still, you know, in a very active phase of the sun, which I've been concerned about, especially the phase in which it's in right now, which is apparently strengthening, and that could, of course, cause a lot of trouble. But anyway, that's enough for that. So a bit of awareness that we have been spared a direct hit and even a glancing hit.
Yet another,
yes.
I heard a most interesting, I don't want to say, it's not a prediction, but a scenario that I had never considered before for things to really hit the fan, listeners. Michael, I'll run it by you. Let's say Greece or Portugal or some country over there, Spain, let's say they default. They implode. Italy. That causes EU banks. People say, well, those are EU banks that are up to their eyeballs in debt with, you know, problems with those particular countries. But okay, so that country XYZ implodes. It directly affects the money supply of the EU banks that are heavily invested with them. Well, who's invested with EU banks? Well, a lot of wealthy Arabs, a lot of wealthy other banks from around the world, other bankers like the Chinese. Oh, that's right, the U.S. And all of a sudden, when they're out of money, they got to go tap their reserve accounts and other things that they have, which means American banks need to cough up money. They show up at the doorstep and go, you know all these bonds I got? I need my money today. And we have runs on the banks and tens of millions of dollars, billions of dollars perhaps per day. It would only take a short period of time before the American banks get sucked into the black hole of this default. And then there we are. So that's the scenario. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Well, it's not too far off from reality because, you know, it's just a matter of time before such a scenario plays out. And on the smaller scale, you know, these Ponzi schemes fell apart. And, of course, when you look at the gigantic Ponzi schemes played on a global basis, you know, they're bound to fall apart. But what, you know, keeps them alive is the fact that banks like the Federal Reserve can continue in trying to prop it up with additional funds that basically come out of thin air. And as such has, you know, kept things going. And the idea continues to be to just run the presses and continue in pumping that into the banks to keep them going. Certain ones, well, I don't know, they might just end up in default. Certain countries might become considered as expendable. And this is the frightening part is, who would be the expendable ones? And why would they be considered expendable? And who would be making the decision for such a thing? Would it be the bankers? Or would it be somebody else? And somebody else concerns me.
While scanning through some shortwave radio bands late night last night, run across a preacher. I don't know where he's from. Sounded like the South. And he was reading a letter from another minister who had supposedly, allegedly, received a prophecy that says the second week of February, you know, some 10 days, 15 days from now, this banking crisis will begin, which will cause basically a similar situation to what I just described. Not exactly, but same outcome. And that the world banking system will be shut down for a period of 6 months. Oops, what do we do, Michael, if you can't cash a check or use a credit card or go to your debit machine for 6 months?
Well, that looks like ample time to reset this system into an entirely different system. And that goes back to the concept of the old mark of the beast idea, neither buy nor sell without this particular tracking tag, you might say. course, we have the technology today for such a thing. And it is something that the powers that be, and these are probably not bankers, it's just guys who probably created the bankers, and they want to see this kind of control. And this is the kind of, you know, scenario that, you know, we could be headed straight into. There are many, many other things that will end up taking place before they, you know, can pull that kind of a thing out there. But as far as a prophecy is concerned, I tend to be careful about them, because they once the prophecy doesn't really come true exactly, I mean, exactly as timed, the prophet tends to be discredited. And that's one of the things that has happened to so many of these that come out now, and you see almost a sure thing. But actually, as I said, bankers have a lot of ammunition. You know, they can keep things sort of like running with just more fiat money, more vapor money, money that's not real, money that's basically digital, and just continue to add, tag zeros onto the debt line, and keep some things flowing, because people are holding back. They got some funds, but you know, they let loose every once in a while and keep the economy going. But if the banking system completely shuts down, there's always that underground economy, and that's what wanted to understand the underground economy from a global standpoint. And in my trips around the world, I would look at home. How important the local currency is, the credit cards, and then just people being willing to barter. And I've noticed that some, many of the smaller mom-and-pop stores, they tend to be able to do that. And certain amounts of goods and services would be probably still functioning in terms of exchange through other means that would be some kind of barter, of course. And barter, as far as the economies, those street peddlers and stuff, is being made all the time in terms of how they produce the goods that they actually sell for to get currency, to get money. But it's one of those things that has, you know, interested me, and in, you know, some of the less developed countries, it's very, very strong, that economy. And those that rely upon finance, exchange of money in terms of the banking system, will get hurt first, and then the progress goes down. And yeah, I'm talking about, not talking about the big guys, I'm talking about the little ones, and those that have cash, of course. Cash will still be a good thing, and others will resort to precious metals and other forms of exchange. So the things will still continue for a while, even if scenario were to hit the fan, because there's so much of this awareness going around. So my play on that is it's not going to come about in that way. I received this morning some additional information in terms of a vision, in terms of a celebrated sculpture or some kind of a device that was undercover and celebrated some Middle East country with people around it celebrating its creation. And it looked not like a sculpture. It actually looked like looked like a covered up missile under this white, big white sheet. And then it was declared to me, they were declaring it so many tons. So I'm looking at that and I'm wondering how many megaton. So apparently the celestials are seeing into reality some of the stuff that we fear, that this type of power that some of these people would, you know, this. I remember when India and Pakistan created a nuclear bomb, nuclear power, became a nuclear power. China became a nuclear power. There was such great celebration. A similar event is on the horizon right now, as far as the celestial sent me in terms of a vision. So it was played out to look like they have under wraps, you know, some kind of a great work, and the shape of it under the cover, and the use of the word ton gives me the idea that it is some kind of nuclear weapon, probably some missile.
I don't know if this is related or not, but it's reported that the Iranian facilities are now buried deep under perhaps 100 feet of solid rock. I don't know what the depth of our bunker buster bombs can get to, but the Israelis wanted to buy bunker buster bombs during the Bush administration, but the Bush administration would not sell them. The Obama administration decided, yes, they would, and some bunker buster bombs have now been sold to Israel. It's questionable. I don't know the specifications. How far can a bunker buster bomb go? Can it go through 100 feet of solid rock? Man, I'd kind of doubt it, but you know what? A tactical nuclear weapon could probably do that. And there you go. You guys can connect the dots any way you want, or maybe there are no dots to be connected. Michael, your thoughts?
Well, Israel has been aware, and they've defended themselves against the Iranian threat before, and they're definitely making sure that they have some kind of ability. The bunker buster, by the way, is able to penetrate quite deep, nearly that deep. However, it requires multiple blasts. So it sort of like penetrates with some kind of a chain detonations through to get deep. And it isn't always successful. So its penetration is not necessarily guaranteed to make such extreme penetration possible. But definitely most of the man-made structures, and Iporam, let's say 20, 30 feet thick, are going to be busted by those, because those will easily penetrate such depths. But
well, certainly, the an enemy A of person B, if person B has bunker buster bombs, the enemy's going to pretty much know how deep those things can go, at least with whatever intelligence they can do. And you'd think they would make sure they would be digging to depths deeper than that could reach. And, you know, you don't really think about a nuclear weapon being detonated. If I'm not mistaken, the last one was in, I don't know, 1945. Is that time that a nuclear bomb has been used in a wartime situation? And just doesn't happen. But the analysis I listened to today says that the Iranians might be within 6 months, certainly within a year, of acquiring a nuclear device of some level. The Israelis cannot allow that, and it's almost, in my opinion, a guarantee that somehow something is going to happen being instigated by Israel, because, in their opinion, the constant threats from the Iranian government is to annihilate them from the face of the earth. So I'm not, you know, it's just a lousy situation that I wish wasn't there, but it wouldn't surprise me that before Thanksgiving, if another nuclear device has been detonated in this world in an act of violence against an enemy. Your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, well, that's extreme pressure, and something that I at one time did not realize the depth of the belief of perhaps those that the powers that be in Iran and many others, of the idea to the actual purpose that they have, which is to completely wipe. They don't even have the right to live, the right to be, in terms of these insanely mad people. It's insane. And it is realized absolutely by Israel. And years ago, I thought it was nonsense. Nobody can feel that way, you know. But the actions through time have shown that there are always leaders and people who really feel that way, and will, when given the opportunity to, will most certainly take that opportunity to act it out, to do that deed. And that would be something that would find its mark with a nuclear device right now, if given it into their hands. But of course, they want to do it in a way that gives them a clean victory. Others wanted to, in Nazi Germany, they wanted to make sure that it was known, it was secret. And the first thing they did was make sure that those who were killing the Jews didn't consider Jews human, didn't consider them people. They considered them less than human, or not worth even the bread that they fed them. So these are the kinds of things that would have to take place in preparing for this kind of annihilation. And there is, more and more we see, there is that premise moving in those that have that kind of power. But when I looked into Iran in a deeper sense, and I noticed that it's not pervasive in their country, there's that idea of a much more sensible way in which people, they need to look upon Israel and just their position, Iran's position in the world. But, they want to make sure they're being motivated by an entity that is extremely, extremely evil. And that's the frightening part, because the human will, the human spirit, or I guess the human level of choice, goes to extremes, and uncaring about those people, whatever those people are, even if they may only use the term people, just so that people get the idea that they're talking about human beings.
Yeah. Somebody once figured out that propaganda can get into the heads of people and make them think whatever you want them to think. Michael, this is weird. Tony was working the early shift tonight, and the 8 o'clock show was an open hour. So he just went to the stack of Riley Martin CDs and just at random picked one out and threw it in. While it was playing, we got an email from Matt Camp to point it out to us that this program Tony played last hour was from February 1st, 2007. And on that program, we get an email from somebody claiming they were on the ship with Riley. It was you.
Oh, yeah.
It was you. And it's exactly, within an hour and 30 minutes from now, it will be exactly 5 years ago. Wow. I know, it's all coincidence.
Yeah, those kinds of synchronicities, they're extremely interesting, because those things happen to me all the time to confirm that we are not essentially alone in the activities that are happening, but our free will is tremendously respected by the Celestials. And they often want to remind us of those kinds of things.
There's at least 50 CDs on that particular spool. I believe there's 160 or 70 Riley Martin shows to choose from. So your odds were one in 170 that he would select that show. That's pretty fascinating. And Matt, thank you for letting us know there are 324 days left till December 21st, 2012. and we're all going to die. Well, we are all going to die, just may not be on that day, but we're all going to die.
Well, that's the truth. We're all going to die physically, but actually, when it comes right down to it, that's the biggest propaganda that has been spread throughout the planet to sentient beings, because that's not the original purpose of human life. And that's the big message, essentially, that I was given in, enlightenment about, that our ascension process was essentially either muddled up, hidden, and or never was meant to be told to a small race of human beings on this planet. But it got out there, and it's still supposed to be very much in action, in fact, in even more. And if anything about that kind of synchronicity that you just talked about has any significance to anyone, this is to realize and make a point that, yes, we're all going to die physically. Physically, the mortal, I guess, the body, the physical body, is only a vehicle for the development of our soul. And that soul development is the very purpose for which we are able to ascend that and climb to divinity, to literal, to really fully become divine. I'm not saying God, but to become divine, essentially the same stuff as these beings of divinity origin. And except we approach it from a totally different direction, from one that is very base, which comes out of the physical order of the universe and ascends the animal realm and then makes the transition through this life, our physical lives. And through that discovery, as we explore, we become engaged in the complex structure of building a platform, a soul that is well able to transition and bridge across, or to transcend and translate, and then finally become glorified or fuse with divinity and become a truly divine, an eternal, non-dying being. This is the interesting part. But I found out a whole lot more about that progress as far as being on the ship, this grand station ship or base out there orbiting Saturn, the New Jerusalem.
You know, is it just my perception, or Hollywood literature seems to be filled with brilliant people who write novels and fiction that talk about how things will be in the future? You know, H.G. Wells, on and on about people, you know, like Star Trek, for example. A lot of the things where you just talk to a computer, you know, anyway, a bunch of things that are in these shows are decades ahead of their time, in some case, maybe a century ahead of their time. Is that just coincidence, or are celestial beings somehow helping to introduce new ideas into the culture through these mediums? Medias, maybe I should say, not mediums as in, you know, but these types of entertainment to prepare the public for what might be coming.
Well, of course, the moves toward where we are today has always been preceded by imagination. And imagination is something that is locked into a celestial origin. In other words, our imaginations are not the development of a physical brain that can imagine on its own many things. It actually is able to function with, attuned to a higher spiritual consciousness. And this is something that is more and more being observed, and many people are taking the step out to say that we are indeed synchronizing with or attuning to higher levels of consciousness, consciousness that can be in agreement, so it'd be a type of one-mindedness, and also one that is attuned to creative, a higher creative intellect. And all of these proceed from the same source, from first source and center. And this is what I began to feel, you know, when I went, when I was at the New Jerusalem, when I was over there, I thought maybe it'd be kind of a good idea to get some ideas and some secrets and something that could help launch our technology forward. And I asked for, try to understand some of these transdimensional movements through space. How was I able to move through what seemed to be a solid object? How was I able to ride a beam of light? Things like that. And basically the answer was, in its time, how did you write on the table and, you know, move it around, and how did this all happen? We have the technology today for that. And it was assured that we would have many of the technologies that are there. And they will be fed to us. And we will glean them and understand them as we explore and make, I guess, the connection to the inventive spirit. And even our patent office says that if we have a idea that is patentable, that idea has to find its source as an inspiration, as a unique inspiration, and not necessarily one that is built upon somebody else's idea. That's a unique inspiration. So this idea of inspiration means its source is not human. And that's pretty much what happens in terms of writers tapping into that same mind of creativity, even if they can't, through understanding other laws that are able to link it up and bring it to reality. The idea of the nuclear bomb, what's one of the subjects we were on, was something that had its time before and probably has had its time this age. And if we pass through this successfully, we're well on our way toward it, having a tremendous future. And there's a certain assurity that we have that that future will be allowed to come to fruition. And we will pass through this terrible time, but not without learning the lessons needed. And these lessons are kind of tough to learn. We shouldn't be celebrating as, you know, it has been in the past for attaining nuclear technology, attaining the bomb, but it seems to be something that has happened as people make giant leaps in terms of where they are fit into our planetary government, our planetary state. But probably more worse than a nuclear bomb is what scenario you drew earlier, which was a failing banking system, which would inevitably stop commerce dead in its tracks. And that is global in scale, and one that could be the shock would be stronger than a bomb, which would be localized, perhaps one area.
But you know, people say, well, if the banking system collapses, as you alluded to before, there will be some local currencies that will still remain in effect, precious metals, and then bartering. Bartering's always been the way it was in the past for, you know, all recorded history till money was invented, you know, comparatively speaking, recently. But let's run down that avenue for just a second. Let's say this situation happens and all of a sudden, you know, your paper money's worthless. You can't eat gold. And oil is useless because the infrastructure to distribute it is gone and nobody has you know, a need for it as they did before, so the price collapse is there. So what about food? We have the largest reserves of food and water, I believe, fresh water on the planet in the Great Lakes. All of a sudden, the stuff that we got over here, we become the like the cartel, like the Arab oil cartels. If we feed a third of the world and we're now on a barter system, I think that puts us in a pretty good position as the United States. What do you think?
That's already been exercised in a sense and shown to be real because, you know, when Kim Jong-il died, his son didn't want, he wanted food. Yeah, he didn't want the aid that was offered him in medical stuff or whatever, but he wanted food. And this is true with China also, with these great populists. The United States has been gifted with an abundance of food, its ability to make food, to agricultural techniques, although, you know, some of it has gone to the negative side with the GMO development. But the idea is that we still remain a tremendous food producer and one that is pretty much reliable. That indeed will be a difficult thing to mobilize worldwide. But inevitably there will, if such a thing would come to pass, the famines worldwide would be severe. Because of the distribution of those who have that source. Water in your local area there wouldn't be much of a problem, and food wouldn't be as much of a problem. You still, in the United States, would still find bartering. There have been some organizations that have tried an exercise in creating their own script in which they could participate in a type of enclosed bartering program where they would meet and create a market that would not would have more ability to exchange goods and services through a common script which was outside of the currency or local currency. It's kind of a type of script that has worked to some degree in some areas, and was, to me, is something that is an exercise in feasibility, and it seems plausible that it could be something that would pop up quickly all over the place because there are so many of these meats and swap meats or markets that pop up every place for a day or so, and find their way around all over the place, making it available to the population using some kind of invisible script. And this is where the government gets in because they don't like that idea. The powers that be want to erase that.
It's oddly enough, in the radio business, bartering is very common. At this radio station, we have traded for advertising in years past for limousine service, flowers, jewelry, salsa, among other things that come to mind, and it's quite common. And, you know, I'll trade you three cases of salsa for 200 radio ads, something like that. Or I'll give you, you know, five limo rides for et cetera. So many of us are used to this. It's also common in the medical field. Am I allowed to say that? Maybe not. But so you didn't hear it here first. But could happen, folks. I just wanted to point out that the prophecy I mentioned earlier, listening to the preacher on the shortwave, it's not something I endorse. I just throw it out there for discussion's sake. It's something to think about. This man believes it. I don't, you know, make up your mind. I don't know that I have enough information to make a choice on that. But we are rapidly approaching, Michael. You know, it only takes one or two or three people working together as a small cell of people that can really, really, really do some damage. You know, folks, we're missing, I don't know, thousands of pounds, tons of enriched uranium we can't find from Russia now. It's gone. Nobody knows where it is. And a grapefruit-sized piece of uranium could destroy the entire city of New York, the entire city, kill everyone a grapefruit-sized piece of this stuff, and we can't find tons of it. I mean, geez, when you sit down and think about it in those realistic, intellectually honest terms, isn't it just a matter of time till some of that shows up somewhere in the earth and somewhere with these all these skirmishes and wars that are going around the planet, not just the ones the Americans are obsessed with, but we've got civil wars all over the place around the world. I mean, you got Syria, you got Somalia, you got, anyway, on and on. Is it really naive to think that we can't, that we're going to somehow be able to keep track of all that stuff that we don't know where it is now and prevent something from going off someday in the near future? Your thoughts?
Well, one of the things is that, yes, the stuff is missing. However, with all of the programs that the United States has in terms of keeping its nuclear arsenal alive, there's a certain amount of maintenance that has to be done. That fissionable material doesn't remain fissionable forever. And you might say they have to be put back to that point of being fissionable. However, if they did get blown up and scattered into the atmosphere, you have a dirty bomb. So a lot of the material out there couldn't create a nuclear chain reaction because they're too worn out. And, like our very own material that, we got to change out stuff in the, nuclear power plants. But in the case of the material that's out there, there have been some research done in terms of is it all fissionable, and a lot of it, in fact most of it, isn't anymore. So they always come back to, well, then it's the dirty bomb scenario, which would not necessarily flatten the city. And the dirty bomb scenario is getting back to like Fukushima. What has happened in Fukushima, and what has happened worldwide because of Fukushima, and globally, what's happening is the scenario of the dirty bomb is becoming more and more real, much more real than a fission bomb or a uranium blast type bomb, most primitive bomb of all. That dirty bomb would be putting a lot of the debris up in the air, so it would scatter into who knows what direction. So when Japan takes the lead and decides to up their radiation levels, the safe radiation level, and increase it, so now what was considered dangerous is now safe. The surprising thing that is happening worldwide is so many countries, and I think even the United States, is looking at raising, or many of the countries already have, raised their danger levels. And why? And I think some of it may be because of the possible aspect of a dirty bomb. These kinds of discussions that we are having right now are basically the similar discussions to what are made behind closed doors by the powers that be, where experts come in and draw scenarios out. Very similar scenarios that which you are talking about there, Z-Man, and one that scares the pants off some of these politicians and leaders, and because they can draw much more cleverly or clearly. They can have all kinds of different ways of presenting and different experts that come in and talk about these things. And they're made behind closed doors. And basically, we're doing a similar sense, except we're letting it out to the public as a counter-offensive, to head off such things from being totally sheepled into the wrong direction, the direction of being under the control of those powers that be. Just want to,
Well, look. Let's say again, a dirty bomb is taking, Uranium that is, I think uranium needs to be refined to around 90% before it can be used in an atomic bomb. But dirty uranium that's of lesser concentration than that, for instance, it could be found in old X-ray dentist X-ray machines from the 60s that are laying around third world countries all over the place. You get enough of that crap together, you can put a little jar of this stuff together. And then when you explode it, those little tiny particles, smaller than the dot a pencil lead makes on a piece of paper, go all over the place. And they remain toxic and lethal for how long, Michael? 10,000 years?
Yes, for thousands of years.
You ain't never going to clean it up. It ain't never, ever. So if you did this, if you had a couple of these and you blew it up in Los Angeles and one in Chicago and one in New York City, human beings could never, ever habitate those areas for 10,000 years because you would die. And what a disruption that would be. What if you took out Wall Street or San Diego, where we have all the ports of San Diego, where we bring in so much commerce into this country, the three-day supply of food that comes through there? Well, what if you could never use those docks ever again? And boy, putting together a dirty bomb cost you a couple $1,000s. Pretty much in the grasp of any insane person that thinks they want to become part of history. That's what worries me. You know, I remember the old song put out by Sting from the Police that had it, "I hope the Russians love their children too." Turns out they probably do. That's why we're all still here. It only takes one nutbag, one idiot that's up in the realm of a higher echelons of a military somewhere to sneak something off and do something mind-bendingly stupid. It's hard.
Well, this is where, when you look at the concept of a dirty bomb and scattering everything around, then you have this concept of Israel doesn't have a right to be. Well, I'm going to do the world a favor and have something that isn't so messy, and we'll just make it localized right on top of Israel, right on top of there, and just. Just a little area. They don't take up much room.
Yeah, the Holy Land becomes the Lonely Land because no one could ever go back there at the risk of dying from inhaling this little tiny fleck of stuff that would eventually kill you. Wow, what a scenario. Yeah, and you know, these terrorist organizations, they may not have a lot of money and you don't need it. You know, and I guess I'm surprised that here we are in 2012 and it hasn't happened yet. This technology's been around since the 70s. 60s, probably since that. You could make a dirty bomb since they started doing stuff like that. But is the reason this hasn't happened so far, does that have anything to do with the Celestials stepping in and perhaps preventing it from happening?
Yes, it definitely has. They've stepped in on occasions, many occasions, and made the powers that be aware that they have a certain influence on those technologies. Now, when it comes down to the crazy guy, could a suitcase size device be walked in there by some crazy? Well, perhaps, and it would be small, and it would be very localized. Would it completely destroy all the Jews? No, it wouldn't, but there'd be a step there. So these are the kinds of things that are right there on the table right now, reality. And that's where I'm wondering about, as in addition to the, you know, this other thing that was unmasked to me in terms of that vision I had this morning. Because most of the things that have been shown to me, all of the things that have been shown to me have already come to pass, came and can be fit into those visions that I've had. Those that have not yet come to pass, because of the hits that I've had, all the hits that I had are scary because they just confirm. They confirm that what the Celestials show me, they want me to know, and they want me to spread around. And that's one of the things. It's probably in their hands already. So it hasn't been unmasked, hasn't been, the sheet hasn't come off what's under, to reveal what's under the, under it. And that's just the level in which it is right now.
Well, the Associated Press is reporting today that a U.S. drone in Yemen wiped out some bad guys in Yemen. Are we? I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm merely telling you what the AP reported today. Are we at war in Yemen? Is the United States so bold that we can just fly these drones anywhere and kill anyone on the planet we feel like it? What if that happened in the United States? What if a Pakistani drone killed some guy out in his field in Nebraska because they didn't like him? I just wonder, you know, we do these things as a country. Maybe this guy was a real bad guy and he needed to be killed. But are we doing anybody any favors when we just go into these foreign countries whenever we feel like it and kill whoever we feel like it and say, okay, what are you going to do about it? I don't know that that's a good recipe for everyone getting along in the world and some of these terrorists being so utterly fed up with the current situation that they do something ridiculously stupid. Those are just my thoughts, folks.
Yes.
Do you think, I mean, from a moral issue, do we have the right to just fly these planes anywhere in the world we want and kill anybody we feel is a threat to us? Is that the new Bush doctrine? We'll come get you wherever you are. We'll smoke you out and kill you? I mean, anybody else see something wrong with that? I mean, you know, I mean, is that the way? Now do we have to worry that other countries will develop drones too? That's a pretty easy thing to come by. Hell of a lot easier to build a drone than an atomic bomb. So when will it be fashionable for all these other countries to have drones? Hell, the Iranians got one of ours. They'll just back engineer it, and they'll have some drones going here pretty quick. You can buy plastic ones on the streets of Tehran, the hottest-selling toy in Tehran. It's
yeah.
A plastic version. And by the way, when the United States asked the Iranians for the drone that they shot down back, they sent them one of the little plastic ones. I don't know. I just wonder. You know, is it in our best interest? Is it in our long-term security to act like this around the world? How long will other countries tolerate this? Can you kill them all, Michael? I don't think you can.
That's a big question, this is not necessarily just a fact of our government. It's our government entwined, or actually the military-industrial complex intertwined into the nations of the world that have made deals with the United States, saying, "Oh yeah, we want the protection of your technology, your government, your military ability. We want you to give us protection," and that's part of this deal that goes around. And it's more than just national security; it has repercussions that reflect off of the deals that were made a long time ago. To protect these other countries that are, I guess, friends to the United States, and some that are somewhat neutral and want to remain somewhat neutral, but then must tolerate some of this type of activity that goes on in their country, Pakistan as one. And these kinds of things are a sign of how intertwined and almost beyond control it is, in terms of that one basic idea that we are essentially trying to be covering all the bases and being the big brother to all these smaller guys. And sometimes they don't agree in our methodology. Sometimes it doesn't look right in our terms of our methodology. But we don't always have the picture of the global interface, how related all of these things are, to try to surgically remove some of these bad guys, supposed bad guys. And some of them are, you know, we're not bad guys. They're like a mistake, perhaps, I guess. That's the kind of stuff that level which motivates not necessarily just the United States, but its armed forces, other forces. So we're not that stable. But you know, for me, living here in Hawaii, You know, a lot of times it's so hard to try to figure out how unstable it is because we're a blend of all so many cultures, and seeing them here all the time, visiting, and never feeling that there is any real animosity, you know, that they're trying to spread around the world and destabilizing the world. That's you know, you're hearing me trying to absorb this, being so well insulated here in Hawaii. You know, that's something that we need to be awakened to. Wake up, look around.
Well, listeners, that's all the time we have for this particular broadcast of Project Urantia. I want to spend time and include in every broadcast the following statement. This program airs because Michael told his celestial friends while on the mothership that he would help spread the word. We're grateful he's chosen this platform to do so. He's a man keeping his word. We could use a lot more people in the world like Michael. Michael has nothing to sell. He's not here to take your money. Artists First will not sell advertising on this program because we don't want to put out this word to someone so someone would think so we can make a profit. We do it, and we are glad to do so. You guys, take the information, make up your own minds. Remember, it's all about free will. You're free to do whatever you want. We put this information out as a public service. Michael, and on behalf of all of our listeners, once again, every week, I want to thank you personally for the time you spent here and the contributions you make to this show.
You're certainly welcome, and thank you for the time and opportunity.
Stick and stay, folks, after the CBS News coming up in about 30 seconds. It's the Artie Kornfeld Show live, followed by Comedy After Dark live. Two more live hours coming up on Artist First Radio. Michael, stay safe. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.